And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is Charting a New Direction. Each of my guests is discussing a subject matter that takes our world in a different direction. My next guest is a financial planner who helps entrepreneurs to build, grow, and maintain their businesses, and helps family-owned businesses ensure success across future generations. We'll discuss his latest book, If Your Money Talked. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Gary Surak is the president of Surak Financial Services, a family-owned business specializing in financial planning, insurance, investments, and employee benefits. For more than 30 years, Gary has consulted with entrepreneurs. Today, the company is one of the top insurance and financial services companies in Ohio, and it employs more than 50 advisors and support staff. Gary received his bachelor's degree from Miami University of Ohio way back in 1973. He lives in Canton, Ohio with his wife, and joining us from Canton, Ohio area. Gary, how are you today?
Doing very well, Bill.
Well, thank you for being our guest. Always love to have thought leaders like yourself on the show. And the reason I brought you on, what has intrigued me more than anything else, is that you work with entrepreneurs to help them keep the money they've made over generations. So if you look at the pattern of family-owned businesses, the pattern goes like this. The first generation is the entrepreneurial part of the family. They found the company. They make the money. The second generation sometimes builds on that wealth. The third generation spends the wealth. And by the fourth generation, the family and the company are pretty much out of wealth. Do you see the same pattern with the clients that you serve? And how can a successful entrepreneur prevent falling into this sort of pattern?
Well, it's really tricky. I have seen many really fine companies disappear in the third generation. And what I've found is the first generation has it together. They're building the business. The second generation moves in and usually are very innovative. By the time it gets to the third generation, and I can't say every company, obviously, but it starts to fall apart. And I've thought about that a lot. Sometimes I think that the third generation has been given so much so fast without having to earn it that they just don't appreciate what has been handed to them. And if it makes it to a fourth generation, and many don't, it usually crumbles. Totally gone.
So that is your experience as well. And why is it, do you think, that that pattern repeats itself? What is it there inherent in a family-run business that causes it to collapse in that third or fourth generation?
Well, I think there's a lack of communication between the second generation and the third generation. The second generation worked so hard to build this. I mean, I'm thinking of a company I work with, and the individual who started this company literally started from his garage, and he turned this company and got it into a building. It became a real viable industry. Well, the second generation took control and was insightful. They built up an amazing business. Third generation came in, and they were given the position of vice president. I mean, just given to them. They didn't earn it. They didn't spend the time. They went to college, had a good time, came back, got a job, and the next thing you know, this company is beginning to fall apart. And I think that there was a total lack of understanding, a total lack of work ethic that occurred. I just believe that when you give things to people and they're not really entitled to have them, they screw them up.
All right. Well, I mean, that's an interesting perspective. But, Gary, these are the descendants of that same entrepreneurial gene. Doesn't that entrepreneurial gene carry over from generation to generation?
Well, I sure hope so, because I'm about to pass it to my third generation.
Oh, really? Wow.
But I'm not really sure. I think it's more what is taught. It's funny, I've thought about this a lot because I think so much good business occurs at dinner tables. And I know when I learned from my father who started our business, a tremendous amount of the information I got from my dad came just sitting down and having dinner with my family. And I would listen and observe. I just don't think that world exists today. And I think there's a lack of communication between the top to the bottom.
Well, in a fast food nation, you may well be right that people don't get together for that sit down at dinner time. Gary, then talk to me. What were some of the lessons that your dad imparted to you across the dinner table that have stuck with you over the generations?
Well, it's interesting. I was thinking about that. I in the book I wrote, and I named some principles, some things that really struck me. And one of them was, don't spend more money than you make. That was a conversation that happened at my table. Another one was don't buy something unless you can pay for it. My dad was a very strong proponent of not putting things on credit and trying to get out of trouble. And my dad was in the financial services business. He started our business over 55 years ago, and fortunately he passed away about 5 years ago. But the legacy of my father lives on every time I walk in his office. Basically, he was a strong proponent to not buy something, don't abuse credit cards, stay away from things that just don't make sense. You know, there are no free lunches.
Those are all lessons that we could learn here in the country as well as on an individual level. My guest is Gary Surak. He's the author of the book, If Your Money Talked, What Secrets It Would Tell. So, Gary, what are some of the more common mistakes that you see entrepreneurs making with their money? Give some examples.
Well, the big one is that most of the entrepreneurs I work with are riverboat gamblers. I mean, they're risk takers. And what happens when you have a risk taker who finally makes some money is they have a tendency to throw it back into the risk. And so what I really find happening is that they have a great idea, they turn it around, and then they start to reinvest, and something negative happens, and they don't have any depth. They have no personal financial cash to pull themselves out of trouble. And I've seen this happen, Bill, so many times. It just is amazing to me where someone will get a great idea, make a lot of money, put it back in, buy a building, build a building, whatever they do. In some cases, buy a jet. I had one client, he built a building and bought a jet all in the same year.
Wow.
And that's what I said. But when the company got in trouble, he didn't have the cash, the wherewithal to pull it out of the bootstraps.
So tell us what happened. What are some of the consequences of a decision like that?
Well, in his case, he literally lost the company. The bank came in, took over. Probably about 100 employees lost their job all in one day. It was a mess. And what really occurred is that, in fact, he ended up in a divorce. Not to mention the fact that I think he had some health issues after that. He just really lost control of what he was doing. And the funny thing, Bill, is he had it. All he had to do was just stay the course and not go crazy. But his ego went wild.
All right, so ego got the better of him. My guest is Gary Surak. So, Gary, you're a money man, and you've worked with money your entire career. You've got some money-making secrets that you lay down in your book, If Your Money Talk. In fact, there are 8 of them. Give us some of the principles of money that you've learned over your years of working in the money industry.
Well, some of the things I do, and it's more, it's kind of interesting. One thing I know is that people have a tendency to try and get rich quick. And that just, I've never seen that really work. I see people who use money to prop up their sense of self, where they just have this huge ego and they try and blow themselves up, or they try and turn money into something that it isn't, which is really something that will make them happy, and that just doesn't work in the real world. So what I've done is I've tried to put some things together where people will maybe just think a little bit before they make an action. Like one of my money secrets is check the facts before you write the check. And the reason I write that is because a long time ago, I happened to come across somebody that could lie and smile at the same time. And I happened to give him a check for something that was near and dear to me, and it turned out it was a total fraud.
Wow. So you were a victim of
fraud. And when I did that, Bill, I learned that I really didn't do very good at checking my facts.
Yeah.
So that's become one of my rules. That's one of my secrets.
I like that.
And it's a big one.
Check the facts before you write the check. I like that. I mean, that is a good idea. What are some other secrets?
Well, having a lot of money does not make you a happy person. It just makes you a person with a lot of money.
Well, but aren't those automatically one and the same things, Gary? I'm obviously baiting you with that question.
Yes, you are. That's fine. No, it's really fascinating. I have met people who really thought they were going to be happy just because they were rich. And they weren't happy. And it would just amaze me how many people I would come in contact with, and they think, well, if I was rich, I'd be happy. And I say, wait, that has nothing to do with happiness. How much money you have, I mean, it certainly makes life easier, but it doesn't make you happy. So one of my principles and one of my secrets is that, you know, if you're trying to get rich because you think it's going to make you happy, there's better ways to get happy.
All right. That makes a lot of sense. What are some other secrets? I mean, this is great stuff.
One of my other secrets is with self-reflection and awareness, you can identify your own limiting beliefs about money and then focus on eliminating them.
All right, let's delve into this one, because I may challenge you on this. You say that with self-reflection, you can find your own limiting beliefs on money. I believe that limiting beliefs about money are a blind spot that almost everybody has, and it's very difficult without the help of somebody else to properly identify what they are. So explain to me what you mean.
Well, I tend to agree with you, because most people don't know they have them at all. And I agree with you, they are blind spots. And when they come up, I find it really amazing. I mean, I've sat in meetings where people would say to me, money is evil. And I'm thinking, money evil? You know, I have some in my pocket. I don't get that. And I begin to ask them questions about what do you mean? Why would that be the case? And what happens is I'm always amazed at where these thoughts were planted in these people's minds and who planted them and how they got there. And scarier yet is how deeply they're rooted.
And that is the important part. So, Gary, I'm talking to Gary Sarek. He's the author of The Money, If Your Money Talked, What Secrets Would It Tell? So how do you, once you identify, yes, I have limiting beliefs about money, you know that that's a given, how would you go about identifying them and getting to the root cause?
Well, it's interesting. I've spent a lot of time studying limiting beliefs in general, just because I was fascinated by them when a friend of mine and a mentor of mine brought them up at lunch one day, and this was probably 15 years ago. And I started realizing that, yes, I had some. I had no idea where they had come from, Bill, but it made me very introspective. And I started to think about things that I was thinking and things that I was saying. And I just started watching what I was saying and listening to my own language, my own self-talk. And I realized that, wow, I have some pretty deep-seated things that I believe, and I'm not sure they're real. And so I began to question myself and really analyze myself, which, by the way, is very dangerous, because you can be critical of yourself, too. But I found out some interesting things that I actually was thinking, and I had no idea where they came from. So I started to kind of peel back the levels of thought process and finally realized where some stuff had come from and who had laid that on me and why I accepted it. And one was as simple as a baseball coach when I was a little kid in Little League.
Really?
Absolutely. I had a coach tell me, and this was early in my non-career, that I was not very good. I mean, I'm a seven-year-old kid or something, and the guy says, yeah, no, you really aren't going to be very good at this game. You might consider another sport.
Wow.
Well, that's what I said. Except I was crushed, Bill, because I thought, you know, I'm a Cleveland Indians fan. You know, I was a huge fan, and I'm thinking, wow, maybe I'll play professional. I couldn't even play Little League. After that, I was just devastated. I ended up playing basketball. But
you're a Cleveland Indians fan. He might have challenged your logic or your judgment, but certainly not your talent. I think that was a little cruel for a seven-year-old. All right, so that you've identified them. So talk to us, once you identified them, how did you turn the corner, Gary? What did that mean to you once you've identified them, and how was your life better afterwards?
Well, it's interesting. I started thinking about what was I really believing and why was I believing it and why did I believe a coach when I was 7 years old? Because I didn't know better. It was a position of authority. And I finally looked and said, but wait a minute, what was he in authority in? He was a baseball coach, so I don't even remember his name. And it just doesn't matter. So I started to peel back the irrelevance of these people is really what I did, Bill. I started looking at these things, think that's totally irrelevant. That has no bearing in my life. And I will probably be better off if I don't even have that thought again. And as soon as it would come up, I would just begin to discount them. And I found that to be exactly the same with money. I have all these people coming in with money issues, and they're talking to me about money, and they have these hang-ups. And it came from grandparents, parents, teachers, religious people. It's amazing how many different people lay stuff on people. And they're buried deep in their thought process. And I say, where do you come from that really is valid, that's real?
And that makes good sense. It is always good to challenge it. My guest is Gary Sarek. He's author of the book, If Your Money Talked, What Secrets Would It Tell? Gary, you've got a lot of wisdom that you've accumulated over the years in the book. What do you want readers to take away from reading your book, If Your Money Talked?
The big thing that I tried to do with this book is I made this what I call an airplane book. It's a short book. I wanted just to be something that someone could grab. I tell stories, Bill. It's all stories. And the long story and the short story is the same thing. We are responsible for our own financial future. It's not someone else's fault. If we're in debt, we put ourselves in debt. We need to take ourselves, take responsibility, and turn this around. And that's what I talk about in my book, and kind of explain how to do that.
Well, it's a wonderful book. In fact, it's a book that should be read not only by individuals in business, but you could probably send 435 copies to Congress, another 100 copies to the Senate, and they could do well from reading your book as well. My guest has been Gary Surak. Gary, if people are intrigued by what you have to say and they want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I would have them go ifyourmoneytalked.com.
ifyourmoneytalked.com, and there's your information, how to contact you, how to buy the book, et cetera, right?
Yes,
there.
Yes, it's there, and I also have it on the Kindle and the Nook, soon to be Apple. We haven't got that worked out yet, and they certainly can Google my name, Gary Surak, and they'll find me too.
All right, that's Gary Surak, G-A-R-Y-S-I-R-A-K, and that's where you would find the information. Gary, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much, and I had a great time.
Thanks. I'll talk to you soon.